Podtacular, episode 353, Storming the Castle, for March 14th, 2013. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dust Storm.
And I'm your other host, Brent Gamer.
And we are here to talk about some Waypoint Bulletin goodness and a little something that got released earlier this week. I think you guys are going to really enjoy the sneak peek at the final map pack. And we got the trailer for Castle. So that came out, I believe, on Monday this week. And little known fact, it's actually going to be playable at PAX, and they're going to do a whole panel at PAX, and they're going to show a little bit of this off, and all around, we're seeing the first glimpses of the final map pack, minus the concept art that we had back in November. So we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about a couple of matchmaking updates in the bulletin, and today's show is probably going to be one of our shorter shows just because of the lack of content in the bulletin, unless we go on some more of our wide sidebar or tangent discussions, which we do regularly.
Yeah, everybody loves tangents.
Everyone loves tangents. It's a little bit of chaos. That's the spice of life sometimes.
Yeah.
And we like to provide that here on Podtacular every now and then.
Like to mix it up.
In our case, just about every show.
But yeah, I mean, we should have a little bit of content now that we know a little bit about the new map pack. So it's not like this is going to be a 10-minute show.
No, it'll be a sizable show for you guys to listen to. It's just, it'll be shorter than our previous four or five shows where it's been about an hour and a half, and this one may be an hour. So it's entertainment nonetheless. So you guys should be filled with goodness in your ears. First things first, the trailer came out on Monday, like I said, and we got a good couple of clips of the maps, and I believe shortly thereafter, if not the same day, Waypoint released some screenshots of all the maps, and a lot of people wanted kind of a mix between large and small maps for this map pack, but it looks like all of them are medium to large, so unfortunately for you more kind of like free-for-all and small team based people, they didn't quite hit the bar on this one for you. But I still think a lot of these maps look really good, and they're going to play really well nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, they already got theirs with the Majestic map pack. If you're into the smaller FFA-style maps or competitive maps, I mean, Majestic was pretty good. This is time for big team battle players to finally get their fill.
Well, so I would hesitate to say that because the Crimson map pack was pretty much the big team map pack, if you think of the way they have all those maps laid out.
Well,
this is more, at least from seeing the maps here in the video when we saw it earlier this week and the screenshots, these are kind of the almost the meat between the two. It's almost like those game types were that really fit for 66, so game types like Extraction and Dominion. That's where these maps seem to really fall into.
Well, I'm excited for CTF. They've been showing off some CTF screenshots on mostly Daybreak, or not Daybreak, Outcast. I mean, I miss CTF. I miss kind of that big team CTF game type. I never really played much of it in Halo 4, but...
Well, CTF is just one of those game types where you expect it to work on every Halo map because it's such a core Halo game type.
I mean, you can do 2v2 CTF. I mean, it works for any number of players, really.
Mm-hmm.
1v1 would be a bit weird, but I guess you could do it. Meet in the middle and smack each other with the flags.
that would be kind of weird.
It'd be a little odd.
There was that one Forge map that you could probably do that on that was really, really tiny in the Forge playlist. I forget what it was called. Maybe someone in the chat can remind us what it was. It was one of those first six community Forge test maps that they had that was really, really tiny and didn't really make much sense.
I just really didn't enjoy the Crimson maps. Maybe that's why I've been waiting for some really good BTB maps. And Outcast looks pretty big. I'm not sure. Daybreak looks big. But you're right, especially Perdition. Perdition looks like it's probably a 6v6 map or 5v5.
Perdition reminds me a lot of Headlong for some reason. I know the map doesn't look like it's laid out the same way, but for some reason it just reminds me of Headlong from Halo 2.
Yeah, so we should probably give some kind of descriptions of the maps we're talking about for people who are hearing all these names and have no clue what to imagine.
All right. They give some pretty good descriptions in the bulletin, too, so we'll get to those in a little bit when we get them there. But we're looking at the screenshots and the Vidoc, or the trailer, right now. Perdition is human-themed. There's lots of vehicles. There's barricades. There's forklifts, tankers, all that good stuff. And it's multifaceted for Slayer, CTF, probably some good King of the Hill and Extractions on there as well. As far as layout goes, I think it's symmetrical, or at least somewhat symmetrical. Judging by the views that we got in the teaser, it's hard to tell completely if it is or not, but it looks like both sides are pretty well balanced out in terms of being able to get to different parts of the map. So we will have to see a little bit more into that. There is a train that goes through it. Unfortunately, it's not something that you can be easily splattered by like you could in Terminal.
Yeah.
There was actually a train on Harvest. I don't know if you guys knew that, but up at the very top, there was the same kind of train that goes on top rail. So the rails are on top and it runs on those rails. So there's the same kind of thing up in Harvest, but now it's put out there a little bit more, but we still don't have any kind of fun toys that you can just get randomly crushed by, or any switches that we still have. So we're still kind of missing those.
Yeah, waiting on switches. Now that I'm looking at them, actually Perdition looks like the largest, so kind of messed up on that one.
Well, I can't decide between Outcast and Perdition on which one's the largest.
They didn't show much of Outcast.
It's kind of hard to tell. Yeah.
You really don't get to see much, and it's kind of from a horizontal angle where you can't really see around the map. You know, it's weird. Daybreak looks kind of small. Kind of looks like Beaver Creek in a way.
I was wondering what it felt like, and you just nailed it on the head. It does have that kind of a little bit more open than Beaver Creek, but that was the map I was thinking about.
Yeah. Beaver Creek with Warthogs. That should be fun.
And Banshees.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Banshees.
I agree with you, though, that Daybreak is probably the smallest map in here. I would almost go as far to say it looks like it's good enough for 2v2. I mean, not 2v2, 4v4. When it sounds like most of these maps are kind of designed more or less to be 6v6. I think this is the map I'm most excited about out of this pack. And of course, you have the Infinity in the background, so that's pretty cool.
Just looking at them, I'm kind of excited for Perdition now. You're right about the Headlong thing. It definitely has that kind of metropolitan UNSC city feel, you know?
Right. And you have the tall buildings. You have other little structures that are kind of just scattered around everywhere. And it's very vehicle heavy. There's streets everywhere. So that's kind of why I give it that Headlong feel.
Did they show off a Banshee on Perdition?
I don't think they did, no.
Because one of the big things about Headlong was that Banshee.
Oh, yeah.
I think they eventually took it out in matchmaking at some point. It was overpowered, but I don't remember. It originally spawned near defensive base underneath the walkway next to the Ghost. So I think they just replaced that with a second Ghost.
When we were playing, when I and a couple of others were playing on Halo 2 Tuesday this last week, the Banshee was in Headlong, at least the server that we were playing on, and it didn't seem that overpowered. Like, it was routinely taken out pretty quickly. Now, of course, it would go on its killing spree of maybe 3 to 7 kills, but it didn't seem that difficult to take out. If the team knew what they were doing.
Well, so, really good offensive teams could use it and take the upper route of the defensive base if they captured the flag and jump on top of the Banshee and ride it all the way home.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was a pretty popular thing to do in Halo 2. Not always effective, because you kind of had to ride slow, or else you'd fall off. But
well, you don't see a lot of those kinds of stunts anymore. That was more back in the Halo 2 and the Halo 3 days, where you would see people hop on top of warthogs and banshees and hornets. And since we don't have any UNSC vehicles, or air vehicles at least, that's kind of not done as much anymore. And CTF, the fact that the flag carrier can shoot back, it almost renders doing that whole thing kind of inert, because it just takes that extra amount of time. And in addition to Halo 4 being so fast-paced, that's just easier for the flag guy to run with the flag and then shoot down anyone that challenges him.
Yeah, it's a different game now. I mean, people already know that, but CTF was a lot different back in the Halo 2 days. Seemed like it was more fun. I don't know. Maybe it's just my rose-colored goggles.
I think for Halo 2, it was the fact that it was the first time that people were ready to play online with this kind of experience. I mean, granted, I wasn't around until Halo 3. So Halo 3 was kind of the big one for me at the time.
Yeah,
there's definitely... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, there's definitely a beauty to simplicity. And since Halo 1, we've just seen more and more stuff added to the game. So in terms of like playability and enjoyability, I think Halo 2 is a prime highlight for a lot of people, because it's straight down cut to weapons, grenades, melee, and the maps were specifically tuned to vehicles.
Yeah.
And now with Halo 3, they introduced the equipment, and the maps were still really good then. Then Halo Reach, they really messed up by taking maps straight from the campaign, and the armor abilities there just was not implemented to its best extent, in my opinion.
No. In our Twitch.tv live chat, Rommel S says, remember flying up on the buildings to snipe from there back in the Halo 2 days. Yeah, that was always fun. You could take the Banshee with a sniper rifle and fly all the way up to the top of the defensive base, shoot from there. That was a popular thing to do.
I remember people trying to super bounce.
Oh, yeah.
I remember stories of that. I never really played Halo 2 back in the popular days. So I just remember people were super bouncing on all of the maps.
I'm trying to remember some other places. There were some spots on containment that you could get up on with the Banshee. That's why they eventually had to take the Banshee out of matchmaking on that map. Kind of happened to a lot of maps with the Banshee, looking back.
Yeah.
I mean, in Halo 2, it was kind of a beast. And then in Halo 3, it was pretty overpowered, but didn't they, like, patch it or something?
I don't think so. The Banshee?
Yeah.
No, I don't remember them patching anything vehicle-related in the game.
Maybe I'm just... I don't know. Didn't they take it out of some maps, though?
They probably did.
Yeah. In Reach, the Banshee was pretty overpowered.
Yeah, because of the whole flips things that you could do with it.
Yeah.
I remember whenever I would play with Nick and Eli, he's a boss at the Banshee in Halo Reach. He was almost unstoppable. Him and I can't remember if Green Skull was one of those people that just wrecked with the Banshee too, but it always pissed me off. Whenever I saw one of their Banshees, I'm like, focus on the Banshee. Don't care about anything else. Just kill the frickin' Banshee.
Oh, yeah, I hated to be on big teams that didn't understand that you need to shoot the Banshee down. I mean, even if you have to unload your entire BR clip into the Banshee, you need to do it. You know, because eventually he's going to run out of juice. He's going to pop eventually. So.
Well, and the projectile weapons were made so effective against vehicles, where as long as you got a good, consistent stream of bullets heading towards it, you could take it out probably within 10 seconds.
Yeah, get a sniper rifle. Start shooting the wings out, you know? Do some of that.
I mean, you could empty a full clip of sniper into a Banshee and it would be gone by the time you finished your clip.
Yeah, so... But now, I mean, it's a little different. Vehicles are completely underpowered in Halo 4, in my opinion, you know? I mean, it's almost like they're useless in a way.
I think everyone shares that opinion, though.
they had a very special place in Halo. You know, I didn't play a whole lot of first-person shooters before Halo, but it always seemed that the other competitive shooters, like, vehicles were either just completely ancillary, and they didn't really matter. I mean, you could use them, but it was more effective to run around gunning people, or they just didn't have vehicles at all. And usually when they did have vehicles, they didn't control very well, but Halo has a very intuitive way of controlling vehicles. You know, it's not in first person. You get to pull all the way out into third person. I mean, the way you drive it is very fluid. And I mean, I still enjoy the way that the vehicles drive in Halo 4, but back in Halo 2, which is two when I Halo really 3. Started playing multiplayer, they were important. If you didn't use vehicles wisely, especially in objective maps, you were going to get dominated, you know? If the other team, you know, really had a good warthog gunner and they just controlled all of the warthogs on the map, you were going to lose that match, you know? That's just the way it went. Nowadays, with plasma pistols and different ways of, you know, EMPing the vehicles, they're just useless. Especially right. with all the one-shot weapons we have now that don't necessarily destroy the vehicles in one shot, but you could put a lot of damage on those vehicles. I don't know about the railgun. I haven't really used that on vehicles yet, but tends to kind of push them around, doesn't it? I mean, you can flip a warthog with a railgun.
The railgun doesn't do as much damage as I think it should do. Or if you want to kind of flip that on its head, the guns and weapons do more damage than they should be able to on vehicles. Because I know for Halo 3, if you shot a Warthog with a BR, you would be out of ammo before the Warthog would even blow up. And now if you have the BR and the DMR, you could easily take out one of those vehicles by just shooting it constantly with one of those weapons. The vehicles, they've been too balanced to the point where they've been underbalanced in the game.
Well, then it's not balance anymore. It's just underpowered. I mean, if you're playing a balancing act and all of a sudden you just drop a major component of your game in favor of other, you know, different parts of the game to kind of favor those, which to me, 343 seemed to favor all of the ancillary stuff that Halo Reach introduced. And to a certain extent, Halo 3, but really the armor abilities were a Halo Reach thing. And 343 said, let's take that idea and crank it up to 11. Instead of working on, you know, weapon balance and vehicle balance and even grenade balance. I mean, I don't understand why they released the Promethean grenade at all.
I mean,
I understand it has some purpose, but it seems like they could have spent that time working on a cooler grenade.
I agree. That one seemed like it was an interesting concept, but it's not a practical use in war games at all.
Yeah.
It has some use in campaign and Spartan Ops simply because you're dealing with the game AI. It's not as smart as a human. So it works okay in those situations. Granted, it's not great. But when it comes to war games, it's one of the useless pieces of equipment in the game.
Yep.
I think another issue is they're trying to incorporate vehicles too much. It's almost like they really need to focus on, if you're going to have vehicles on the map, then you need to gear the map towards vehicles, not include just all vehicles or as many vehicles as you can. Now, for things like the Ghost and the Mongoose, those are lighter vehicles. Those are okay. But for something on, like take Exile, for example, you really don't need a tank or a Banshee on that map.
No.
Like the Warthogs would be just fine. And if the vehicles were actually beefed up and to the point where they should be, similar how to they were in Halo 2 and Halo 3, then those would all you would need to control the map. You would have map dominance if you had two Warthogs just running around the outside, or even just one. So, I agree with you where the vehicles are totally underpowered in this game, and they really need to balance that aspect back into the game.
I want a Mongoose with a Spartan laser on it. Instead of having room in the back for like a passenger, just has like a Spartan laser. That would be fantastic. Or that'd like a rail gun scary. Or something. Like a rail gun in the front you can shoot.
So just shoot straight out the front.
Yep. Just you can't even aim it. You gotta point straight at them.
And whenever, well, yeah, whenever you shoot the railgun, you go flying backwards.
Yeah. That'd be cool. It has like a recoil effect, like pushes you backwards when you shoot it. It'd be nice. Because, I mean, UNSC never really had a good alternative to the Ghost. The Ghost is a very Covenant thing. The Mongoose is, I mean, it's good for flag captures, but it's about it. If you need to get somewhere fast. But even then, I mean, you're unprotected while you're driving it. I got shot off a Mongoose more times than I could count.
So, right.
I mean, sometimes it wasn't worth it. Getting sniped off of one of those things is the worst. You just feel bad. You're like, man, why did I even get on this? Why am I driving this Mongoose?
Right. I think Halo 3 had the best... what's the word I'm looking for? Not deployment. Best iterations, best implementation. Best implementation of vehicles in the Halo franchise so far.
Yeah.
I mean, Halo 1 and Halo 2, they were still kind of like coming out with the game, so they were introducing new things and destructible vehicles and being able to board in Halo 2 was fantastic. And I think with Halo 3, that was the vehicle balance that kind of defines Halo. And since then, we really haven't had that.
Yeah. Put some ejection seats on all the vehicles. Like if you're about to blow up, you can just hit the eject button, shoot up into the air.
Yeah. Now, in terms of like the weapons and everything for Halo 4, I think Halo 4 has one of the more kind of balanced set of weapons. I think those work really well. Minus the bolt shot, of course.
Here's my problem.
The bolt shot's the one exception.
Here's my issue with the Halo 4 weapon set. I don't mind it, but at the same time, I don't feel it's the most balanced set. Like, the inclusion of both the DMR and the BR... I'm not sure how to explain it. It's this weird spot where you have two weapons that were designed with the same purpose in mind, which is a primary weapon that was meant to balance the game at any range. I mean, if you look back at, I mean, not any range, but if you look back at Halo 2, the reason the battle rifle was so beloved was because it essentially had the same function that the pistol had in Halo 1. Which is, if you're across the map, I can get headshots on you. And if I get enough headshots on you, you're going to die. So it brought that kind of skill base to it. And it was the one weapon that could do that, period. I mean, other than the carbine, but... I mean, carbine was whatever. The BR was the way to go. That was your weapon. When you spawn, you have it. It balanced the game because everybody had a way to get mid-range to long-range kills with headshots. Consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And you go into Halo Reach, and the DMR replaced that function. The DMR was a more long-range-based weapon, but it was the same idea. You can get headshots at range when you spawn. But
right.
Now you have this kind of weird spot where you have two weapons that are meant to serve that same purpose. And so you can't decide which one to choose, really. But I mean, from what I've heard in the community, I can't really attest to it because I've played and I enjoy both the BR and the DMR, but I've noticed that I do get more kills with the DMR. And a lot of people say the DMR is overpowered. And it kind of renders the BR useless in a way. And so you have this kind of unequal gameplay where I have the DMR because I need to be able to get kills at range, but the DMR isn't as powerful at kind of mid-range combat as the BR, but you can still sometimes get kills with it. But it's just infuriating when I'm choosing the best weapon that I'm supposed to pick to win the match, because I mean, I play to win, you know. I'm going to choose the best weapons available to me.
Right.
And the DMR is simply better because you can get more kills at longer ranges. Now, it's less effective on the smaller maps, but
yeah,
it's just infuriating on a smaller map when somebody, you know, they're right behind you and they out BR you, and you know that they chose that weapon for, you know, reasons unknown, but at the same time, you know that you need to stay with the DMR because that's the best weapon at it pretty much any range except for mid or short range.
Yeah, mid to short range. Yeah. I think to that point as well, there's a lot more battles that happen longer range now with how with how big the maps are and that in nature, just with how fast the game is. So you have to kind of have that space out there. So I think in terms of balancing, that's where the whole issue between the DMR and the BR happens, because you have a lot more more of those longer range engagements than you do with the shorter range, where the BR is most effective. Because if I get into those close quarter battles, most of the time I get taken out by those people with BRs, because the DMR, I'm have to adjust a little bit more. I might miss a headshot, and that'll cost me my life most of the time. So I think it's just that encounter ratio of times when it's appropriate to use the BR and times when it's appropriate to use the DMR is unbalanced. I think the weapons themselves are balanced. I think it's the times when you have to use them is the part that's unbalanced. And that's just my opinion. I know there's plenty of other opinions out there, but judging from how much Halo I've played, at least, I think that's kind of one of the things that actually makes it stand out, even though it's not something that's just blatantly out there.
Well, also, like you were saying earlier, there's beauty in simplicity. And right. I think in a way, there's almost too many weapons now. I think they need to kind of scale it back a little bit. I mean, I don't mind the number of weapons, but it just seems like the more stuff you add, the more chances there are to mess up major, you know, parts of the gameplay.
Like Call of Duty.
I mean, you look at Tetris, and they mess with Tetris all the time. And every time that they add extra stuff to Tetris, nobody cares and nobody ever plays that version, because the original version of Tetris is just that good. I mean, it's incredibly simplistic. The most simplistic, well, not the most simplistic, but it's a simplistic puzzle game. And to this day, there are a good number of people that will tell you that Tetris is the best puzzle game of all time. Mm-hmm. And I mean, soccer moms mostly, but some moms will tell you that it's the best game of all time. You know, I mean, I love Tetris. I love playing Tetris to this day, and it's the same every single time, and it's incredibly simplistic. It's Tetraminos, you know, dropping onto a field, and it's basically just how good is your spatial reasoning and, you know, reaction time. But it's still fun, even though it's the same every single time. It's simplistic, but the gameplay is so focused and so well designed that it holds up over the decades. And Tetris at this point is like 30-something years old. I mean, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it proves that adding stuff doesn't necessarily make a game better. You know, it's solidarity of gameplay design. You know, it's finding out what is the core, fundamental, enjoyable part of your gameplay and focusing on that. And 343, I think they're still working on that. They're still figuring out what is it about Halo exactly that makes this game special and fun and still beloved by the thousands and thousands of people who play it. I mean, even if you didn't like Halo 4, a lot of Halo fans are still sticking around. You know, they're holding out hope for Halo 5. I mean, it's a game that... It's strange. I mean, there's some games that just stay video games, and then there's games like Halo that become franchises and really just transcend pure video games. I mean, the video games are the big part of Halo, but there's so many other parts of Halo that people enjoy. There's the Mega Bloks. There's the novels. There's the videos that people make.
Right.
Just so many other aspects that even if the games aren't necessarily fun, which they are, but I mean, even if you didn't enjoy Halo 4, there's other parts of Halo to keep you sticking around the community.
In terms of going to that whole simplicity thing, there's, I think for a game like Halo, there's some kind of natural evolution to it, and there's always going to be people that are resistant to that change, because people want the Halo they either kind of started off with, or they kind of want that vanilla setting, and It's a tricky thing with Halo, because you want to move the franchise forward. You want to introduce new things that'll make the gameplay that much more interesting. But at the same time, it's a very difficult balancing act. And with 343 being so new, I think that's one of the things that they threw off. The balance of Halo is kind of thrown off right now, and they're doing the best they can with the community feedback to bring that balance back in with the tools that they can use for Halo 4. But I think we're not going to see that balance back if it can be obtained by 343 until Halo 5. And I'm really hopeful that with all, because they've already shown that they're really listening to user feedback. They've shown that through what they've done through Spartan Ops. They've shown that in the latest title update. Although some people aren't quite fully convinced yet, but they did address a lot of changes that people had. And there's some other things in the bulletin that they mentioned this week that just shows that they're still listening to community feedback. But I think Halo 4 is a learning experience for both the community and 343. For 343, it's learning what the community overall really feels about Halo and compared to what they feel about Halo. And then for the community, it's trying to see how we like this new brand of Halo. And it's gonna, there's going to be kind of a meeting point in between where both sides are going to come to this agreement where it's like, okay, I like this new stuff of 343 that's thrown into the game, but at the same time, this other stuff from the old Halos is a core part of Halo that needs to be kept in. And something, a good example of that would be something like Race. Almost everyone I talk to wants Race back in.
Yeah.
And it's been in Halo since Halo 1. Granted, Halo 2 and Halo 3 didn't have it, but for Halo 3, we saw people using the VIP game type to make their Race maps, and then we had Race brought back into Reach. And it's just one of those core things that 343 will come back eventually to the community side of things, but then there's going to be parts where the community are going to have to come and meet them halfway. So it's kind of this relationship between the two that I think Halo 5 will find a balance between the community and 343.
Well, I have a theory as to why they kept Race out of Halo 4. And it's a pretty interesting theory. You see, they're going to release Halo Kart exclusively for Kinect. And they didn't want people playing Race in Halo 4 because it'd be too much fun and they wouldn't buy Halo Kart. And this is a good way to move the Kinect, you know. I mean, it doesn't sell very well. All the soccer moms bought theirs and they don't play it anymore. So you have to reach the hardcore gamer somehow. And this is the way to do it.
Oh, you crack me up. Oh, you're brilliant, Brent. You are freaking brilliant. That would be really funny if they were making like a racing Halo game.
That'd be great. But I mean, Star Wars did it with pod racing on Nintendo 64, and that game was fantastic.
True.
Like, that was one of my favorite N64 games.
But that part of the universe can be segregated like that. For Halo, it's not quite that easy. I mean,
you could like fly around in sabers or long swords or something. Like, I can imagine those.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Those pilots, you know, being competitive and racing around the stars and things. I mean, it'd be different. Wow. It wouldn't be focused on Spartans, but it would be focused on another part of the UNSC. That's equally important.
I mean, you've thought about this, haven't you?
Well, in the last 10 seconds when I was thinking of Halo Kart, I'm like, how would they do it? You know, this is a joke, but how would they really go about doing it?
So what would be Rainbow? What would be the Halo equivalent of Rainbow Road?
It'd be tough. Maybe racing like directly along the Halo where you can like see the Halo's always on the horizon line, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like actually moving down the Halo. Like you can see the Halo ring kind of spinning as you go down it because you're going so quick. I don't know. Just
interesting. Would you be flying on the inside or the outside?
Well, maybe it's a mix, kind of like on F-Zero. And like you have to like switch off to the outside on one portion and like Covenant cruisers are shooting at you and stuff. And you like switch back to the other side.
Interesting. Quite interesting. I think you may have a game there.
Yep. You can unlock special characters like grunts, banshees.
Oh, goodness gracious. That would be awesome. That would be awesome. I doubt we're going to see it, but that would be totally cool.
But getting back to more serious stuff, I've been thinking about the problem that 343 faces. And it's why I have a lot of respect for 343 and what they're trying to do, but they're entering a franchise halfway into its life cycle. Or, I mean, maybe less than halfway, depending on how many trilogies they put out.
It's still a good way along, though.
Yeah, I mean, there were four games, if you don't count ODST, main games in the franchise. that came out prior to Halo 4. And that's a lot of fandom already built up. The fan base for Halo Reach was kind of the pinnacle of that. I mean, they made Halo Reach specifically to get people into the Halo franchise, in my opinion. They knew that 343 would need a new set of people. They needed to bring in more people into the franchise to help 343 out. And the best way to do that was put out a prequel. You could play Halo Reach and have absolutely no understanding about Halo whatsoever, because essentially Halo Reach is the very first. It's chronologically the beginning of the Halo franchise.
Right.
And it helps to know about Halo. And most of the people that played Reach did already know the Halo storyline, but you didn't have to. And Halo Reach is a great place to start if you're going to get into the franchise. If I was going to kind of get somebody into Halo, I'd probably have them play Halo Reach first, just to get an understanding of where that universe is now, and then have them start with Halo 1. A lot of people would probably disagree with me. I mean, it's always
best. No, I can see it. It's from the story aspect, it's a little bit easier to get into, because I think with Halo 1, everyone that got into it, you either got the story or you didn't, and the more you got the story, the more you were sucked in. I think Halo had a steep learning curve, where Halo Reach really doesn't have as steep that Halo Combat Evolved did.
Yeah. I think also it helps set up humanity's plight better. In Halo 1, you don't really get the sense that humanity is kind of screwed. They kind of allude to it, but essentially the big part of the Halo universe was that the humanity was losing the Human Covenant War. I mean, we were on the ropes. The Spartans were pretty much the only hope we had. And in Halo 4, that switches over to where we're the big dog on campus now, you know. But Halo Reach really pushes the point that, yeah, this war is messed up. The Covenant are brutal. They'll destroy anything. They will glass your planet. Like, your planet will cease to exist. You can't live there anymore. You know, I mean, and you don't get that in Halo 1. Because Halo 1 is a very isolated thing. I mean, it's out in the middle of nowhere. The only humans you get to see are the humans that made it off the Pillar of Autumn. But with Reach, and even ODST, I could see... I wouldn't start somebody off with ODST, but if you want to get a glimpse of kind of how messed up that war was, ODST is a good place to see that, too. Mm-hmm. Because anytime you play from a human perspective, that's going to show that off more. Because the ODSTs are obviously not Spartans. Much easier to kill than a Spartan is. Even in Reach,
they're the next best thing to the Spartans.
Yeah. And even in Reach, Noble Team is... I mean, there's some Spartan 2s on there, but most of them are Spartan 3s. And they're just general... They're not the Master Chief. You know, they're not the one-man badass that can go around, you know, destroying massive Forerunner installations and floating around space and dying but not really dying and all the crazy stuff that Spartan 2s do. What I was getting at is 343 has this problem where they want to change the franchise. They want to make their own mark on the franchise. But right now, the only thing you can do to the franchise to make your own mark is to either take stuff out, which people are very averse to. I mean, if you were to take out special parts of Halo, the parts that people love, and change those around, there would be a massive outcry. I mean, it would be... people.
Well, there's already a massive outcry.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, there's an outcry, but I mean, it would be even worse. I mean, imagine if... I can't even imagine.
I don't want to imagine.
They took grenades out or gave you unlimited grenades or some crazy dumb... I mean, I don't even know how you could mess it up, but I'm sure that there's ways that you could. Any massive, huge change would have been real bad. So all they can really do is add stuff. And the more you add, the more opportunities there are to...
mess
like
up.
Like I said earlier, you know, mess up other parts of the game.
Yeah.
But there is
a certain part where you have to move the game along.
Yeah, like I was saying before on a previous podcast, they don't really... it seems like with Halo 4, they wanted to bring in casuals, they wanted to bring in new players, and that makes absolutely no sense to me. It makes absolutely no sense that this far into the franchise, you know, halfway into your 6-game story arc, assuming that there's not going to be a 7, 8, and 9, which I don't assume, you know. I mean, they've already registered the domains for Halo 7, 8, and 9, but...
I mean, we don't know if that's... they're actually going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, right now they have a contract for this trilogy. But, right. I mean, assuming that this trilogy makes a lot of money, I could totally see 7, 8, and 9 coming out. I mean, there are games that are less popular than Halo that have 7... I mean, look at Final Fantasy. I mean, right now... there's like 17 different games in that franchise that I can just think of off the top of my head. I mean, there's even more. There's side games. Let's see. I'm trying to figure out. I can't even figure it out. There's too many Final Fantasy games anyway. But what I'm getting at is they could totally make 7, 8, and 9. Mm-hmm. They are too far along in the Halo franchise to try and pull in new people. Right now, the most important thing that they need to do is retain the player base they already have. Because, I mean, that right now they are at risk of losing more people than they will ever gain. They're not going to gain many more people into the Halo franchise. Because at this point, they don't want to have to go through the chore. And, I mean, some people would think it was a chore. I would enjoy it. But, you know, they don't want to just jump into a franchise into the fourth game. I mean, it was the same thing with Metal Gear Solid. People love Metal Gear Solid. I didn't want to have to play Metal Gear Solid 1, 2, 3, and then play number 4. And apparently that game had like 100 hours of cutscenes or something crazy like that. You just don't want to do it. You don't want to jump in at that point. I mean, there's so many novels now that if you haven't read, like, you wouldn't understand a fraction of what's going on in the Halo universe. If you haven't read or listened to podcasts or talked with community members that are into that. So they're not going to get a whole bunch of new players, but they want so bad to get this new set of players into Halo, and you just can't do it. You are too far into the story. I mean, you might get a few thousand new players with each game, but if you try to get those players by changing things about the gameplay that the people that already enjoy Halo dislike, you're going to lose thousands more.
Right.
And those are the thousands of people that are willing to pay a lot of money for Halo.
And for some of the things, if you're going to get or try to get people involved in your game, that's where the advertising comes in. It's not about changing the game mechanics. You need to keep that core set there. And then the people that really enjoy the game, that are your core fans, they're going to help spread the game even more. Because of people like us who do the podcast. And that'll attract more people towards the game as well. So, yeah, you're completely right. They need to focus on their core player base and make sure that the experience at its core is not too much fundamentally changed from what everyone's used to, but still has those small little additions that just keep making Halo better.
Yeah.
Something like Ordnance. Ordnance works perfectly for big team. It makes sense for that kind of style. But it's not something that you would normally do in something like a Capture the Flag or a 4-on-4 or Oddball. It just doesn't make sense. It's a good idea for big team. And it would be a good idea to just have it as an option in customs, which it is. But in terms for these core team game types like Capture the Flag and Oddball, it's just something that kind of breaks the game. So you have to be careful of what new things that you add to a franchise to not really piss off your core player base. Like, I know a couple of people who are kind of big community leaders, and they've already said, I'm done with Halo 4. That's not a good sign.
No.
Now, I'm one of the other people that I enjoy Halo 4, and when I have chances to play it, I really enjoy the experience. But you can see where some of the other parts in this franchise, and the campaign of the Spartan Ops, those are really well done. They spent a lot of time really focusing on the story behind it, and they did an excellent job. But when it comes to the multiplayer aspect, the war games, the thing that everybody plays, and that's the reason to play Halo, and they... you gotta keep that core experience very similar and change it very little. We saw the big changes in Halo Reach that they did with the armor abilities, and people kind of got furious in some cases. And then with Halo 4, they added some more stuff, and people got even more mad.
Yeah.
So they just have to be very, very careful with the multiplayer stuff. They nailed the campaign and the Spartan Ops, in my opinion. They really need to... They still need to have good core storytelling and gameplay elements for those pieces of Halo, but they need to spend a lot of extra effort making sure the multiplayer experience in Halo 5 is top notch. If they, yeah. I have a feeling that this is their buffer game. This is their one game where people are willing to forgive them and willing to wait for Halo 5. If they mess Halo 5 up, Halo as a franchise is screwed. They have to nail the multiplayer for Halo 5, or they have to get it pretty dang close.
It's essential that they make a game excellent enough that the people who do play it will tell the people who quit during Halo 4, hey, this is the Halo game you're waiting for.
Right.
Like, you jump back in now. This is the time. Like, this is the Halo you enjoyed. Here it is. Let's go play it. You know, Halo 5 needs to be about recapturing the people they lost with Halo 4. They need to address the things they messed up with Halo 4.
Which they're trying. They're trying to fix what they can. And it's a good omen on their part. They're really showing that they are listening to the community. And I think that's the one redeeming factor that 343 has, is because it is run by so many people who were part of the community to begin with, that they are very attentive to what the community has to say. Now, the fact that they didn't have a beta, the fact that some of the stuff that they came out with just didn't make much sense, yeah, that's a side effect of them being a new studio. And unfortunately, they did it with a franchise that is so loving and caring to most of us, and being the Halo franchise. But they have good intentions. That's the one thing they have going for them right now, is they have good intentions. They're trying to bring the Halo 4 back to what people really want within the confines of what they can do with the game. The talent, I don't think, was quite there for Halo 4, and I think they're going to learn from a lot of their mistakes and really put that much more effort into Halo 5.
Yeah.
We've already seen them hire other community people in as well. We've seen Bravo come in, and Bravo has been part of MLG. He knows the ins and outs of the multiplayer aspect of Halo. So they're paying attention. They know that we're upset with some key aspects of the game. And it's just a matter of what they do to fix it for Halo 5. That's going to be the make or break part of the franchise. So we need to get back on topic.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of on topic.
Oh, no, it was.
I mean, later on in the bulletin, I don't know if we're going to get to that right now, but they're making changes to Halo. I mean, it's a somewhat small change, but it's important. It's important in what it symbolizes. So.
Well, and it's been such an iconic thing since Halo 3 that just having it back in is going to be a sigh of relief to people. But we'll get there when we get to that part of the bulletin.
Right.
We really haven't covered the maps in full detail yet, so let's kind of back up and hit those kind of bullet points. So, like we said, Perdition is kind of has that Hang 'em High feel to it. It's a human cityscape. It kind of has those tall buildings. It has a train. It has some forklifts and all that good stuff. There's some aspects that kind of remind me of Turf a little bit as well.
Yeah,
I think the color tone is more Turf, and the actual map feel is more like Headlong. Does that kind of seem right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a map I'm really excited to play. Just from terms of I think this is going to be a good... It seems symmetrical, judging by the screenshots. I'm not exactly sure, but it looks mostly symmetrical. So I'm really looking forward to see some of those, like CTF, Capture the Hill, or Capture the Hill. Wow.
Capture the Hill.
Capture the Hill. Extraction.
Hill captured.
King of the Hill. I wouldn't see much Oddball being played on this. Maybe some Fiesta stuff, but...
Riff Ball.
No. Although you may be able to fit a small Griff Ball court on here, but no Griff Ball. Next one is Outcast, and this one is pretty much desert/rocky. If you've played the Spartan Ops missions, then there's been plenty of environments that have the same kind of atmosphere to it. So the one that has the quarry, I forget what the... Yeah, it's called Quarry, actually. Quarry is like this. Sniper Alley kind of has this same feel to it where it's rocky and dusty and everything. I can't really tell the layout of this map by the screenshots that they have. I can't really glean too much off of whether or not this is asymmetrical, how big it actually is. And like Brent said earlier, we were not given many shots of this in the actual trailer. So I think this is the one that still has the most to be shown off so far.
Atmospherically, it kind of reminds me of Burial Mounds. Just kind of dusty and...
It does.
Sun's, you know, up in the sky. I like that skybox. Looks nice. It's one. I mean, just looking at the screenshot.
Halo is a pretty game.
Yeah.
I'll say that outright. I've said
it
outright
before. Skyboxes in gaming.
Yeah.
You mind if I read some of these descriptions? They're pretty well written.
I was actually going to have them read after we actually go through them. So, yeah, we'll read them here in a second. Daybreak is the more natural one. Brent kind of compared it to Beaver Creek a little bit. It's a little more open. It's not as box canyony either. But it definitely has that. I mean, it has the bases. It has that rocky and tree, grassy, mossy feel to it. So, there's another map that kind of feels like this too. I can't quite place my finger on it though.
Watching the video again, trying to get an idea. We'll be learning more about these maps on Monday. When the embargo on
all the press release
goes up, yes,
right.
Probably some IGN walkthroughs, like we saw with the last two map packs.
Yeah, IGN, GameSpot, whatever.
Whatever
and wherever.
Looks like there's a. Maybe I'm just looking at it wrong. Where's this Manus coming from? No, that's on Outcast. See.
Actually, it reminds me of. It kind of has that feel from. One of the firefight maps in Halo Reach, the one that had the network test and the generator defense on during the beta.
Oh, yeah,
I forget what that map's called.
Oh, man, Reach had such memorable maps.
Oh, yeah, I know, right? I remember Spire. Man, does that count? Spire, Boardwalk, Countdown?
You're talking about
Overlook. Thank you.
Yep.
Alice's Pieces and Mech Warrior. Thank you.
That was the firefight map I never played on. Didn't enjoy it.
I used to play on it just because of the challenges.
Wait, no. Overlook was the one with Beaver Zone, right?
No.
No, that was Powerhouse.
Beaver Zone was Powerhouse. That was an actual multiplayer map.
Oh, what am I thinking of? There was a...
What are you thinking
of? It is Overlook. I don't know. I just remember Generator Defense not being very fun. I mean, I didn't enjoy
it. Well, no, I never played it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, if you want to go ahead and read the descriptions now, that would be a perfect time.
Yeah, let me pull it back up again. I don't know why I shut it off. Closed out of the bulletin before I needed to. Let's see. Daybreak's description. Although it's currently being used as a military staging ground, this fertile world will one day be colonized. And the longer description says, Operation Daybreak is effectively a cluster of Oni research facilities and sensor relays residing in the vast highlands of Savaron on the blue-green planet Oban. With the destruction of so many worlds at the hands of the Covenant, this planet is now undergoing preparations to make it a home for millions of human refugees.
Hungry refugees!
When I see refugee, I just think of hungry for some reason. millions of human refugees. In the meantime, the UNSC Navy continues to use it as a key staging ground for a number of highly classified military exercises. So it's going to be a world that they plan on probably terraforming a little bit and making it suitable for colonization. So,
I wonder where this is.
Oban.
Savaron. I don't remember seeing that anywhere in the Halo lore before, so...
Maybe it's a new piece of lore.
I don't know. For some reason now, if I think about it, Savaron may be familiar. I'll have to do a little bit of research on it later.
All right.
Do the next one.
Outcast, dissident strongholds such as this one helped foment several anti-centralization movements. One of the few worlds left unscathed by the Covenant, this remote outer colony of Talista has always had a strong anti-centralization and pro-colonial autonomy sentiment, even since before the war. The UNSC halted several early political uprisings in the colony's major population centers, but this only fostered a more radical form of dissident, now in the form of secluded and heavily armed redoubts. Ultimately, these sites would provide the foundation for a number of major political movements. So this one's kind of the idea of
one of those colonial planets.
Yep. The insurgents that Captain Lasky didn't necessarily... He kind of felt bad about them. Kind of felt... Right.
And rightfully so, I think.
Yeah, he felt like maybe they were getting the short end of the stick. You know, the UNSC was kind of bullying him a little bit. But then the Covenant attacked and he quit caring, so... I mean, that's what happened. Like, he felt bad about being in the UNSC, kind of, and then, like, the Covenant attacked. And Lasky's like, yep, now I'm going to become a badass.
well, I mean... Well, it's the Covenant. It's no longer humanity that they're having to worry about now.
Yeah, I mean, now they're having to fight for humanity's existence as a species, so.
Right.
That's kind of cool, kind of throwback to kind of the stuff Forward Unto Dawn was concerned with prior to the last, two episodes? Perdition. Yeah. Citywide evacuation orders have confirmed the unstable thermal reactor cannot be contained. New Carthage has always been a prime example of a healthy, growing colony ever since before the war. Hidden below the city of Pilvros, however, one of the thermal reactors which provided clean and safe energy in the past has now gone critical. While a large-scale evacuation effort is underway, scans of the reactor section are quickly acquired to help analysts determine the root cause of this impending disaster. So, reactor messing up, which is kind of...
Yeah. Well, when I thought of evacuation, I also thought of the signs in Headlong, yeah. Which was remade into, what was it for Halo Reach? Breakneck? Yep. Breakneck.
Yep.
They had the evacuate signs on there as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's kind of what made me think of Headlong as well.
So yeah, it's radioactive down there. Your Spartans are probably in danger. Well, not. Well,
they have power suits.
Yeah, their power
suits keep
them safe, but anybody else probably needs to stay away from Pilvros.
Yep. All right, so that covers our first look at the map. Well, I guess technically our second look at the map, because we did get the concept arts back in November when they did announce all the map packs. So first look, second look, whatever you want to consider this. This is our first real look into the maps, and we'll see some more information come out on the 18th when the media embargo lifts. And then there's some other stuff that's going to be coming out as well in reference to not specifically the maps, but some stuff that's coming up in PAX East. So 343 has a panel called Halo 4 Multiplayer Past, Present, and Future, which is going to be on Friday, March 22nd at 5 p.m. So if you're there, make sure you get in line early, because I'm sure a lot of people will probably be trying to stuff their way in. I'm not going to say anything about me, because I will probably get special access. But it's probably going to... I know it's going to be some pretty interesting stuff. They're going to talk about multiplayer, what they've... I think they're really going to focus on the reaction to the community. I've heard some talk back and forth between some people, and I think they're going to kind of focus on that community feedback a little bit. And they're going to talk about some details that they're going to be bringing to the Halo 4 experience in terms of updates to the multiplayer experience. And their description in here, I actually would like to read it out. It says... this is for the panel. Halo 4 delivered a unique set of multiplayer experiences, immersing players in an episodic campaign with Spartan Ops, while delivering more breadth and depth in the expanded war game Sandbox. You've played the Majestic map pack and may even have had a chance to play Castle map pack on the floor here at PAX. So I'll preface that. There is going to be a section playable for these Castle map packs. So if you're at PAX, you're going to have the chance to play the maps before they get released. Continuing on. Come prepared to hear 343 Industries' Frank O'Connor, Kevin Franklin, Dan Ayoub, and David Ellis, as well as Certain Affinity's Tom Potter, discuss where we've been, where we are, and what is on the horizon for Halo 4 multiplayer. So that is the panel that's going to be on Friday, if you're at PAX East. So I will be there as well. If you are there, shoot me a tweet, shoot me an email, and we'll try to meet up and do some stuff while we're there. I will be hopefully trying to get some gameplay footage of the maps if I'm able to. We'll see how well that goes. And if all goes well, it'll be a great panel. I don't know if it's going to be live streamed. I know they've done some live stream stuff in the past, but they haven't said... I don't know if there's a live stream schedule yet. We will look into that for you guys, though. As far as matchmaking playlist update, from looking through the bulletin, I didn't see where they were adding a new playlist, right? You didn't see it. I don't think you saw it. Did you see that? I didn't see it.
No, I didn't see any playlist updates, but they do mention that they're switching over to bi-weekly updates.
Right. So I think the game's at a point where they've gone through most of the playlists they want to go through, and they're just really fine-tuning the playlist now. And they're really getting ready for the CSR, the actual skill-based ranking system. Competitive skill rank? Yeah. So they're really gearing towards that. That's coming out next month, and they're ironing out the final details on the FFA playlist, so we'll probably see that next week, I would guess. If what you say is true, if they're doing bi-weekly, then I guess they'll take this week off and then push out this for the next week.
Yeah,
so we'll have to see what happens.
Love how they try to sugarcoat going into bi-weekly updates. They're like, we're going to be able to spend more attention on the things that we update. You know, our updates are going to be more substantial because it's going to be a two-week process. When actually it's just, you know, natural moving away from, you know, updating your game every single week. They need to, I mean, they're probably already in development for Halo 5. So, I mean, the team working on Halo 4, they're kind of moving into...
It does give them more time, though, to actually iron out the playlist details and not have to rush it out the door. And because, I mean, when they do the playlist test, they're obviously trying to balance out weapons and actual game types and everything. So it probably gives them a little bit more leeway, too, in actually getting those out.
Yeah, I just think after the next title update that they have confirmed as of this bulletin, we'll get to that in a second, they'll kind of start moving into just leaving the game be. Until Halo 5 comes out, they'll keep updating it, but you're going to see smaller updates, probably playlist updates like normal. We'll switch those around.
I think we will see another big TU come out within the next maybe 2 or 3 months.
Yeah,
I do see that coming down the pipeline.
And they confirm that. They go on to say that they don't mention anything specific, but they say that there is indeed a title update, large and in charge, coming down the pipe to fix some of the problems people have with the game. I don't know what those problems are. I mean, I can think of problems, but I don't know which ones they're going to ultimately fix.
Right.
I'm ready for FFA. Love some free for all.
I'm not a huge proponent for FFA, but I know a lot of people are, so I'm happy to see it come. A couple of things that are really, or I think is probably some of the important parts of the matchmaking playlist update for this week, is they're going to be having a thread coming out in the forums specifically for weapons. Now I think that's means that they're probably going to rebalance weapons.
Yep.
For the game.
Take out the bolt shot. Just get rid of it. That's the only way to balance it. Just take it out of my game. Or make it single shot.
Or, like, I mean, I think for the bolt shot, it has to be at max as powerful as the Mauler, where you literally have to be in their face to get a one shot kill with that overcharged shot.
Yeah.
Like all of the, like maybe all but two of those projectiles that come out of that, like shotgun blast, have to hit in order to get a one hit kill off of it.
Yeah.
So there's going to be weapon specific threads coming out pretty soon. And the other big thing for this week that's coming out is the confirmation of the X marker when you die. So you can finally say, one shot on my X.
Yay!
You can finally say that.
My favorite Halo t-shirt was a Halo 2 t-shirt that shows basically a Spartan. I mean, it's the Master Chief, but he's holding a rocket launcher. And next to him, it shows all these red X's, and it says, I see dead people. I love it. It's my favorite Halo t-shirt. I got paint on it, and now it's ruined, but...
Aww.
Oh. If I could find another one, I would buy it on the spot. It's amazing.
Probably eBay.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, yeah, the X logo will now be making its reappearance back into the game, where it should have been all along, in my opinion.
Yep.
So, be happy.
It's just a Halo thing. It needs to be there. It's the X.
Because everyone says, like, on my X. Like, yeah. I even still say on my X when I'm playing Halo 4, and it's like, oh, well, that's right. I'm not really there anymore, am I? So
even in Halo 5, I would still say on my X. Even if it never returned.
Because you're just so used to it.
I know. Well, I mean, it's a Halo thing. There is a certain vocabulary that comes along with Halo multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
And X is the short way of saying I'm dead. Or you're dead, or whatever. It's dead.
Well, it's more calling out where people are on the map, yeah. So you can have your teammates come clean up kills or whatever.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Good on 343. I mean, that's just, it's a no-brainer. I mean.
And that's one of those things where it kind of goes to my point where they're listening to the community. They're listening to what we want back.
Yep.
So, a good thing on them to bring that back into the whole of Halo 4. To wrap up the bulletin, they're doing some more screenshot stuff. This week it's snipers. There's some pretty good ones on here. It's still amazing me what people can do with some of those filters.
Yeah.
Like some of the screenshots in here are just beautiful.
Which one's your favorite? I mean, obviously people will have to go to the bulletin to see what you're talking about, but just name
it. Right. I think my favorite is either anticipation, pick, or old camo. I'm trying to decide. Hunter's Moon and Beamfire 2 are pretty good, but I'll go with old camo sniper by Fire Sins.
I like fire for effect. I realize it's literally just a weapon being fired, but this has got a nice color scheme. And I like that the blast on the sniper rifle. I mean, I probably would have chose old camo sniper too, but I didn't want to choose the same one as you.
That's all right.
Just trying to keep it mixed up a little
bit. Blissful sniper doesn't do much for me. Catch a casting doesn't do much for me. Full circle and solace sniper. All right.
Full circle is just, I mean, it's not really anything special. I mean, it's cool looking because the architecture is cool looking.
Right. So, I mean, most of them are pretty good. So, but, I mean, I'll give it that.
Old camo sniper has a really nice effect.
Yeah, it has so that.
Good choice.
Was it sepia?
Yes.
Is that the brown? Yeah.
It has nice that. Sepia tones.
There's something about sepia that's just really appealing to the eye for some reason. I don't know what it is, but...
People like old things. They do.
People like old things. Quote of the podcast. Oh, my goodness. People like old things. So that wraps up the bulletin for this week, though. Yeah. It's pretty... we took a lot of time talking beforehand just on some tangents, but as far as bulletins go, this is probably one of the shorter ones that we've seen. But we're going to go ahead and get to a couple of submissions that we had. So last week we asked the question of if you've read any of the Forerunner trilogy books, what was your favorite moment? And are you looking forward to Silentium, which comes out in 5 days, actually, as of this recording? So we got a couple of responses. First one comes from Rommel S, and he writes, I'm really excited for Silentium. My favorite part of the Forerunner novels is learning about the Flood. I hope we finally learn their true purpose and origins in the next book. I'm also interested to see where this whole Gaosh thing leads. I'm betting that Master Chief has the Bornstellar Didact imprint, and this is why the Halo 4 campaign Master Chief hears the Didact talking, but Cortana can't. I bet it was part of his genetic unlocking that the librarian did. So, I guess that would kind of explain why Chief would be able to hear it. But I'll contradict that though, because this is actually the Didact actually talking about live time events. Because there's one line in there where he says, or something along the lines of, I know of what your folks are doing at the third ring. So it's talking about lifetime events. So it unless there's like a genetic biological transceiver kind of thing that maybe because of Bornstellar and the Ur-Didact having that connection to each other, maybe that's possible, but that's kind of a stretch, in my opinion.
Yeah. I really haven't read any of the Forerunner books. I don't know that much about the Forerunner stuff. As far as I know, the Librarian imprinted on Master Chief. I don't
know. Yeah.
I still need to read those Stellar. Books.
Yeah. It's a little weird.
Lasky should imprint on Master Chief. Give his essence to him.
No, I like the Master Chief how he is.
Yep.
You want to read the Game Dudes?
Game Dude 03 says, first off, I wanted to say that my birthday is today, March 14th. I'm 19 now, and I'm so happy to be a part of the Podtacular community. There's a 50-50 chance I'm not here listening live because I'm kind of sick right now, but I'll be eager to hear it when I download the podcast. To your question, sadly I've not read the 2 Forerunner books, but I will be planning to buy them and the third one as well. Thank you guys, you're the best for reading my submissions. See you guys later, and keep on fragging birthday cakes.
Hey, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. So, as far as... yeah, so some people haven't read the books. As far as the books go, if you haven't had a chance to pick them up, definitely do. They will explain a lot of what's going on in the campaign of Halo 4. So if you're kind of lost and confused, those will help quite a bit. And these are the books that give the history of the Forerunners before they disappeared and they activated the Halo arrays. And for Silentium, this is strongly believed to be the book where we actually see the end of the Forerunners as pretty much a species, because we didn't know the Didact was still around. And then them activating the Halo array. So this is that book. This is the book that's coming out of Silentium.
If I was going to activate the Halo array, I would have to come up with like the best final line ever, because you know that the entirety of your race and everything else in the galaxy is going to get destroyed. So you get to say the very last thing for your civilization. So
what would you say?
Probably like, come at me, bro. And then like a flood combat forms like running at you, and you just like activate the Halo, and then they're like, woo!
And then, wait, do that again?
That's my combat form sound.
All right.
What would you say, Dusty?
I don't know. That's kind of a big responsibility. I mean, it's one thing if no one's there to be there to document it. Can I just say some random funny thing? But if it's like something that's going down in the history books. I don't know. That something about great sacrifice, maybe. I honestly don't know.
More money, more problems.
No, not gangster. someone in the chat wrote, and so we, because of our hubris, we destroy ourselves as we destroy our enemies. That's a pretty good one, eh? That was from Alice's Pieces. I don't know
about my Halo array. Would you like fries with that?
You may take our galaxy, but you will never take our freedom.
Get to the chopper.
get to the chopper. Now we're going to back into some old Halo stuff. All right, so I guess I'll try to answer the question of the week since you haven't read the books yet, Brent. One of the interesting parts for me was seeing how Chakras was basically turned into a monitor of installation. One of the installations. I'm still personally a little lost on which installation it actually was, but to see one of the ancient humans actually be turned into one of these monitors.
Yeah.
So that was one of the cooler things, because it actually, after the events of Krypton, where so Krypton's storyline focuses on Born Stellar and his journey to getting the imprint from the Ur-Didact and basically becoming the Born Stellar Didact that we know in the books. And we see the two human companions, Riser and Chakras, kind of follow him around in the companionship that they have together. And then Primordium goes to the path of Chakras a little bit after that storyline. And we see his existence on one of the Halo rings. So there's a part in Krypton where the Didact and Born Stellar, Chakras and Riser basically get, I think it's like captured or something, and then they're basically jettisoned off, and Chakras and Riser are dumped on one of the Halo rings. And then we see this story of Chakras meeting up with some other ancient humans who have been put on this ring as caretakers, and we see this story, and eventually, I think it's the Born Stellar Didact. The Born Stellar Didact comes back and finds him, and the Flood that's on the ring is actually doing something really messing with their minds, and the Born Stellar Didact actually comes and saves Chakras from this inevitable fate and basically turns him into a monitor. So that's one of the cooler parts of the Forerunner trilogy to me so far. As Alice Pisa says, it was trippy, which I agree.
It's a trip, man. All these aliens, like, there's an alien civilization that was, like, around before, like, humans were on Earth, and they were, like, ancient humans. They were, like, flying around space, and there was, like, this parasite. It was, like, the Flood, man, and, like, it was going to get destroyed, but Forerunners and humans were, like, fighting each other, right? And they were, like, killing, but then they didn't want to kill, and the Forerunners were, like, man, like, I'm going to put you in this, like, flying computer thing, and so... Then they were, like, all, like, touching each other and getting imprinted, and then they fired off these huge rings, right? And then the rings killed everybody, but didn't really kill everybody. And so, like, Halo.
Perfect. All right. So that wraps up pretty much the bulk of this show. There was something that you told me about before we started. You wanted to bring up the Easter egg real quick?
Oh, yeah, on Midnight. Everybody's been looking for that Easter egg that they talked about in one of the past bulletins. I think it was last month or the month before.
Yeah, it was 3 or 4 weeks ago, I think.
Yeah, and nobody could find it, but if you... I'm not sure how to explain it, really, the location, but after you go through the first portal, you're in this room with these kind of Forerunner lightning... Not lightning, it's like energy... rods or whatever. They're beams of energy shooting down from one node to the other, and you have to shoot at them after they fire, and eventually a sentry will come down and go into the portal that Cortana has opened for you, and then you follow Sentinel. The sentry. Oh yeah, Sentinel. The Sentinel. I don't know why I said sentry. I'm thinking about the armor abilities. The Sentinel
sentry here.
Falls down and runs into the portal, and you follow the Sentinel into the portal, and in that room where it's like multi-leveled with pillars and there's a bunch of knights, and it's kind of tough. I had trouble with it on Legendary, but...
So it's the one room you always jump back to between jumping to different rooms. So whenever you're jumping through the... So this is the part after you're done flying. Whenever you stick Cortana in to go through the portal systems... You always, your first jump is to one room, and this is the room where the Easter egg is, and then your second jump is back to this room, but you're in that middle part. And so you're actually going back and forth between that first room you come in and then other subsequent rooms until you finally get to the last place you need to be. And you go in and out of that room three different times.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's like Brent said, you go into the first room. I watched the video. It looked like it was two on the left closest to you, two on the right closest to you, and then three or four on the left. And the Sentinel will come down. Wait for him to go through the portal. You go through the portal. You'll see him fly up to a hologram-looking thing, fly up, and then three battle rifles will fall. Why you would want battle rifles on here? I mean, they're good against the crawlers and the watchers, but not too much against the knights. And it's only three, so...
Yeah, that's...
I don't know if that's... I wouldn't quite consider that an egg. I mean, yeah, it's something that's it's hard to find, but is it really useful or cool?
Well, I mean, it's an Easter egg. It's just not a good one. I mean, in my opinion, here's the thing. Halo had such amazing Easter eggs. I mean, even in Halo 1, it had great Easter eggs. And then you go into Halo 2, they introduced the skulls, which are, I mean, that's a Easter egg, you know, I don't know. It's like I don't know. Skulls are important to Halo now. And that was just kind of an ancillary thing that they added into Halo 2. They probably didn't think much about it. They didn't know how popular skulls would become. But, I mean, those were originally Easter eggs. People had trouble finding them. In Halo 3, people had trouble finding the I Would Have Been Your Daddy skull. And that was a great Easter egg. I mean, that was tough.
But those actually made changes to the game, which were interesting. Where this one, the change to the game is it gives you three BRs.
Here's this weapon you don't need.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, technically it is an egg, but it's not something that's very substantial, in my opinion.
The eggs in Halo, when you find them, it's always rewarding. There's always something cool that you would get from it. I mean, it was an image or, you know... Seeing whoever that was in his boxers, you know, on a ODST, just cool stuff. And you find an Easter egg like this, which isn't incredibly easy to find. I mean, this is the Easter egg they've had the most trouble with out of the update. And they finally find it, and then it's just a Sentinel that drops BRs.
Like, yeah, it'd be another thing if it dropped like rocket launchers or something.
Yeah, that would have been cool. Like
it lacks that. Just kind of all in cool factor.
I mean, if you get a rocket launcher with four rockets, is it really going to wreck that level? I mean, it would help. But I mean, probably the fear there was everybody's going to learn about this Easter egg that drops rocket launchers on this level, and then they'll just be able to beat it on legendary real easy. Like, no, if it's got like four rockets, it's not going to affect the level that much. I mean, you'll get some easy night kills. So, I mean, there's more than four knights on that level.
So, anyways, yeah. That's our two cents about that.
Scarab gun.
Yeah. Oh, the Scarab gun. Stuff. That would be awesome if they brought that back as an egg. Granted, we kind of need to see a Scarab in the game, I think, first. But
full auto rail gun.
It could be a harvester gun. Instead of a Scarab gun, it could be a harvester gun.
Oh, yeah.
That freaking big laser beam.
Yeah, it's like a Spartan laser times 1,000.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we need a question of the week for this week. I don't want to do questions about the Castle map pack because I want to save that for when we get a little bit closer to its release. So, question for this week. What should we do?
What would you say before you fired the Halo array?
Do we really want to make that the question?
I mean, that's what I mean, want to make. If you got something that you want, I mean, go for it. I mean, it's not my section of the podcast, but I'm just making a suggestion.
Well, I mean, I'm asking for a suggestion, so that's it's a pretty good one, actually. People
get creative with it. That's why I like the question. I mean, you can be as crazy or as serious as you want to be with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we asked about what they would do, what that tarp had done for them, we didn't get many responses. So on the let's try it. Let's see if people will catch on to this one. I'll know if maybe that was just an off one or something. But yeah, let's do that one. So say it again.
Right before you fired the Halo array, what would you say? What would be your final phrase before you knew that the galaxy was going to be wiped out?
There you go.
Yep.
So, last phrase, as humanity or whatever race you want to be, before you wipe out all life in the galaxy.
Grunt. Grunt couldn't activate the Halo array. But
a grunt activating a Halo array. That's awesome. So, yeah, that's the question. You can send that in to submissions@podtacular.com, as well as any other Halo-related stories or news or anything you want to talk about. You can also use our submission form on the homepage, and you can check us out on Twitter and Facebook as well as all of our other social media areas like YouTube and Twitch and all that stuff. You can also leave a reply in the comments about the question of the week as well. I'll read those off on the show next time. I think there was one question a couple shows back where there was a couple of responses in the comments and I forgot to read them, so I'm sorry, guys. But I will make a point to go to the comments and actually read them out if anyone answers them there. Make sure you check out our game nights. We have Monday night matchmaking and Wacky Wednesdays every week, and those are on each respectful day. So Monday night matchmaking is Monday, of course, and then Wacky Wednesdays is Wednesday. And those are at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 5:30 p.m. Pacific. And that's 12:30 UTC. So UTC doesn't really change daylight savings time. So base it off of that if you need to.
What night is Wacky Wednesdays on?
That would be Wednesday night, Brent.
What about Monday night matchmaking?
That would be a Monday night.
All right. I just wanted to make sure.
All right.
Because I've been showing up on Tuesday and Thursday.
See, well, you're a day late.
Yeah. See?
Yeah. So that's why you've been missing.
Don't want to make that mistake.
No, you don't want to make that mistake. However, on Tuesdays, on certain Tuesdays, we have Halo 2 Tuesdays. And those are played on Halo 2 Vista. This isn't something that we're doing on Xbox. This is actually the computer version of Halo 2. So I said last time that if you didn't have it, you could go pick up a copy at probably Best Buy or if you have a Fry's or some store that sells computer games. They probably have a copy or two. If not, you can find copies on Amazon, eBay, and you can find a copy of the game for probably 10 to 15 bucks. And we did find an issue with Halo 2 Vista, then the voice chat actually doesn't quite work, so we will be setting up something like a Mumble server or a TeamSpeak server or something for our next night, which will be March 26th. We're doing these every second and fourth Tuesdays of each month until Halo 2 finally kicks the can. So if you have a computer and you have Halo 2 Vista, please come join us, and we will be regularly trying to go through maps and game types and other things to help get you those multiplayer achievements, and then you can work on the campaign achievements at your own pace as you need to. Because I think when they finally turn the servers off, those achievements will no longer be obtainable. I'm not exactly sure on that. I need to talk to Jess specifically on what taking the servers offline actually means, but it sounds like multiplayer as a whole, unless it's system link, it actually goes down. So I need to actually check up with her, and I'll probably do that at PAX East.
Well, you see, Halo 2 Vista does computations on their servers, and that's why you have to keep it online all the time. The game wouldn't work if it was offline.
Right. Exactly.
I was just making a joke. That was the SimCity debacle. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I've heard.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. So, also, you can leave us a voicemail, 240-200-HALO. That's 240-200-4256, and leave a Halo-related message. We've had one so far, which we played on the show last week, or was it the week before?
I think it was the week before.
It was the week before. Okay, that's right. So that line is open. It will ring a few times just because it's Google Voice. So just wait till you hear me saying, please leave a message. And you can leave your message on the show and then actually get played on the show. So we will actually hear your voice. Please keep it to about 90 seconds, no longer than 2 minutes, if possible. And please use that because people were asking for it. And we brought it back for a reason, so please use it. I think that covers pretty much everything. I plug this every now and then. I should probably plug more often. But if you like what you hear on the show, we give it out free. We make everything free. The website, forums, everything free to you guys. So it's not free to me. I still have to pay out of pocket. So if you have anything that you're willing to send over in terms of donations, we would happily accept it. There's a donation button on the homepage that you can use. It's not something that is required, but if you're willing, then we would certainly appreciate it.
Yes.
And that wraps up the show for us tonight, folks. We appreciate all of our live listeners coming out here to listen to us. We had quite a few numbers on our last show when we actually had Beyond Entertainment on. And of course, when we have other communities, they're usually tweeting as well to their people, and they have some more people come in. So we had a pretty big turnout for that one. We had a pretty decent turnout tonight as well. So if you haven't been listening to any of the live casts, you can definitely listen to it on Twitch TV. That's where a lot of game channels do their broadcasting, and it's now home to our live recordings as well. So our live recordings happen every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern time for the regularly scheduled stuff. So this is when we talk about the bulletin and other Waypoint related news throughout the week. And then we have other communities on to do special announcements. Those will usually happen throughout the week. And if you follow us on Twitch, if you make an account and you follow us, you'll receive an email notification whenever we go live. And those will usually be if they're weekdays or nighttime, like after 7, and if they're on weekends, it could be just about any time, really. But if you want to catch those...
Go ahead.
All right. If you want to catch those intermediate shows, definitely follow us on Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, all those places. We will always send out notifications when we do extra intermediate shows.
Yes.
Two other shows that are coming out very soon. Our last campaign mini series show with 6OK from Robot Entertainment. He used to be one of the ones that did the Waypoint Top 5s when Waypoint was first getting their start. He was on the show for our last campaign mission, so that will be coming out soon after this show is released, so stay tuned for that one. We also have Halo Fan for Life back on the show to discuss episode 8 of Spartan Ops, and we're almost done with wrapping up that show as well. So stay tuned to our podcast feed, iTunes, Zoom, whatever, for those shows coming up very soon. With that said, thank you guys again very much for listening. This has been episode 353 of Podtacular. And with that said, we are out. Keep on fragging those trucks.
Keep on fragging old things.
Keep on fragging Halo carts.
Keep on fragging X's. Well, I mean, if you're fragging the X, you're doing it wrong, but...
well, unless the X is actually someone that's actually teabagging you, so in that case, you're doing it right at that point.
Yeah. Preferably the frag becomes an X.
An X for the other team, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't throw grenades at your own feet. That's a bad idea. Just don't do it.